Akatra Foundation presents The Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. You know, we often see entrepreneurship painted in these really bright colors, right? Flashy launches, huge exits.
The highlight reel, basically.
Exactly. All triumph, no tears. But beneath that surface, there's often this crushing weight leadership when things go wrong, that sheer terror sometimes.
Yeah, the part they don't put in the press releases.
Right. And that's what we're tackling today. We're diving into one of the most, I think, brutally honest books on leadership out there, Ben Horowitz's The Hard Thing About Hard Things.
It really is. Such a counterpoint to all the sort of feel-good advice. It's gritty.
Definitely gritty. So for this deep dive, you've pulled together quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. We've loaded up. We've got analyses of the book itself, looked at Horowitz's own journey, his core ideas, and, you know, specific examples from his time running companies, real-world stuff.
Okay, great. So our mission today is really to get under the skin of Horowitz's experience, not just what he did, but maybe how he thought, how he felt during what he calls the struggle, and figure out what that means for you, the listener, facing your own hard things, whether that's in business or, frankly, anywhere else in life.
Absolutely. It's about finding strength when there are no easy answers.
So before we jump in, maybe a quick intro to Ben Horowitz himself.
Sure. So Benjamin Abraham Horowitz, born 66, he's an American entrepreneur, investor, author, probably best known now as co-founder of Andreessen Horowitz A16s, the VC firm.
Right.
But before that, he was CEO of Opswares, which actually started as LoudCloud. And his credibility, it really comes from being deep in the trenches. He lived through some incredibly tough times in Silicon Valley. This isn't theory for him. It's lived experience. Painful experience, often.
He definitely earned his stripes. Okay, let's unpack that journey. Where did this intense realism come from? His early life must have played a role.
Oh, hugely. Starts right at home. He was born in London, but grew up influenced by his father, Davy Horowitz. David was this prominent writer who went through a really dramatic political shift from radical left to conservative.
Wow, that's quite a transformation to witness up close.
Exactly. And Ben saw the intellectual honesty required for that. You know, admitting you were wrong, changing deeply held beliefs, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it costs you personally.
So that idea that doing what's right or what you believe is right might not be easy, that was baked in early.
Pretty much. It's a theme you see later in his business decisions.
Yeah.
He then went on to study computer science at UCLA, saw tech as this big transformative thing, and got an MBA at Columbia. So he developed this mix of, like, analytical thinking and understanding people, understanding value.
That blend sounds crucial. How did that translate when he actually got into the tech world? Awesome. Silicon Valley in the 90s. That was a wild time.
It was. And those early lessons were key. He worked at places like Silicon Graphics, Netscape, alongside Mark Andreessen, his future partner. But the real fire, the crucible, was founding LoudCloud in 1999.
LoudCloud. Right before the crash.
Oof. Yeah, talk about timing. It was this cloud infrastructure idea, super ahead of its time, but launched right into the dot-com implosion.
So straight into the struggle.
Immediately. Customers started going bankrupt. Spending vanished. They had a brutal IPO. Horowitz was just thrown into nonstop crisis mode. It wasn't just business stress. He talks about the immense psychological toll.
I remember that quote, something about sleeping like a baby.
Yeah, I slept like a baby. I woke up every 2 hours and cried. That quote really captures the rawness of that period. It was the birth of the struggle concept for him.
And then came the pivot to Opsware.
Right. A massive, painful pivot. They sold the core services, part of LoudCloud, to EDS for about $63 million. That meant focusing purely on the software, but it also meant huge layoffs, like hundreds of people. A fundamental change in what the company was.
That sounds incredibly hard. A real survival move.
Absolutely. A masterclass in just staying alive, making impossible choices. But it worked, eventually. That arc ends with selling Opsware to HP in 2007 for $1.6 billion. A huge success after years of struggle.
Instead of just retiring.
Nope. He teams up with Andreessen again to start A16, their venture capital firm. And what's fascinating is how they built it around helping other founders navigate their own struggles. Using his hard-won lessons. Focusing not just on tech, but on the messy human side of building companies.
He basically turned his scars into a roadmap for others.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah.
Which leads us right into his core philosophy. He just completely rejects that sanitized version of startup life.
Right. No rose-tinted glasses.
And none. What's radical is how he embraces the struggle. Not as some temporary bad patch, but as the normal state when you're trying to build something meaningful. It's this constant reality of navigating problems that, frankly, have no easy answers.
Okay, so if struggle is the default, how do you lead through that? How do you keep going without just burning out? Especially when all the advice usually focuses on, you know, clear paths to success.
That's the million-dollar question he tackles. He argues your most critical leadership moments happen in crisis. That's when your character is really tested and revealed.
So it's about making calls with incomplete information.
Exactly. And taking total ownership of the outcome, good or bad. He realized the most valuable skills aren't about executing a perfect plan, because plans go wrong. It's about navigating ambiguity, managing chaos. And through all this, especially the layoffs, he developed this really deep, almost painful understanding of the tension between what the business needs and the impact on people.
What kept him going? You mentioned the psychological toll. It wasn't just money, clearly.
No, not primarily. It seems boiled down to this profound sense of responsibility. To his team, his investors, his partners, he felt he owed it to them to see it through. Plus, there seems to be this intellectual curiosity about leadership itself, like he was studying it even as he was living it. He wanted to build something that lasted.
That sense of responsibility, it's a heavy weight. How did he cope? You mentioned operational stoicism.
Yeah, it's his term. It's about facing the brutal facts, assessing things clearly, and then acting decisively. But also finding ways to maintain your own psychological balance. For him, that meant things like exercise, having trusted advisors he could be totally honest with, focusing relentlessly on solving the next problem, and being transparent, even with bad news.
So focusing on what you can control.
Exactly. Letting go of the stuff you can't, which sounds simple, but in a crisis, it's incredibly hard and incredibly powerful.
Let's talk about some specific moments. You mentioned three defining turning points. What was the first big one after LoudCloud launched?
Right. The first major one was definitely the dot-com crash and customer exodus around 2001. Suddenly, a huge chunk of their customer base just evaporated. Companies went bust or slashed spending. The bottom fell out of their market.
What did that teach him? How did it transform things?
It was a brutal lesson that even a great idea or model can become obsolete almost overnight due to external shocks. It forced them into radical cost cutting, a laser focus on the customers they did have, and this very hard realization that survival means being willing to ditch your original assumptions fast, while somehow holding on to your core team and capabilities.
A complete reset, basically. Okay, turning point two. You mentioned the sale to EDS.
Yes, selling the services business to EDS in 2002. This was monumental. It wasn't just a business deal. It was admitting the original LoudCloud vision hadn't worked out as planned. It meant selling the core business they had built and laying off a massive part of their team.
How did that impact him personally? That sounds like admitting defeat on some level.
He describes it as incredibly painful, a deep personal and professional blow. It really drove home the intense loneliness of being CEO, you know, making these decisions that profoundly affect people's lives and knowing the ultimate responsibility rests solely with you. You can't really share that weight.
That loneliness is something he writes about quite powerfully.
Okay,
what was the third major turning point?
The third was more internal. The management crisis and organizational rebuild around 2003-2004 during the Opsware days. He faced a crisis where some of his own key executives started questioning his leadership, the company's direction.
A challenge from within his own team? That must have stung.
Deeply. He describes it as a personal crisis, forcing him to really look hard at his own leadership style. How was he communicating? Was he building the right culture?
And how did he resolve it? How did it change him?
It involved making some tough personnel changes, yes, but also a much deeper commitment to transparency and communication within the leadership team. It cemented his belief that culture and leadership are absolutely intertwined, and critically, that even successful leaders have to be willing to look in the mirror and evolve, often through really uncomfortable self-examination.
It sounds like these crises forged his core ideas. One famous one is the peacetime CEO versus wartime CEO. Can you unpack that a bit?
Yeah, it's a really useful framework. A peacetime CEO, he says, focuses on expanding the market, building consensus, developing the team for the long haul. Standard growth mode.
Okay.
But a wartime CEO is leading when the company's survival is threatened, existential threat. That requires a different mindset, maybe more paranoia, much faster decisions, sometimes direct commands rather than consensus. It's about survival first.
And the key is knowing which situation you're in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And being willing to switch modes. What does the current situation demand? That's the hard question leaders need to ask themselves constantly.
He really doesn't shy away from the human cost either. That quote, "The hard thing isn't making a big, bold, audacious goal. The hard thing is laying people off when you miss the goal." That just hits hard.
It really does. It cuts right through the usual rah-rah goal-setting talk. It grounds leadership in its real-world consequences, the impact on actual human beings. How do you manage that burden? He suggests you don't really manage it in the sense of making it go away. You carry it. It shapes your future decisions.
And that ties into the psychological reality, like the sleeping like a baby quote we mentioned. As a startup CEO, I slept like a baby. I woke up every 2 hours and cried.
Right. It's funny, but also deeply revealing. It normalizes the intense pressure, the fear, the self-doubt that so many leaders feel but rarely talk about. It's okay to find it incredibly hard.
It gives permission to struggle.
Precisely. And his sense of responsibility wasn't just abstract. There's the ramen noodle story.
Oh, yeah, tell us that one.
During the really tough times at LoudCloud, cash was incredibly tight. He walked through the office late one night and saw engineers eating instant ramen noodles because they were trying to save money, pouring everything into the company, maybe even struggling personally.
Wow.
And it just drove home for him the personal sacrifices employees make and the immense responsibility a leader has for their team's well-being, not just the company's balance sheet. It makes it very real.
That must change how you think about culture. He talks about culture not being about perks, right? Like free snacks or ping pong tables.
Exactly. For him, culture is about the values you live by, reinforced through actions, especially tough actions. He gives the example of his shocking rule at Opsware.
What was that?
Fining executives, including himself, for being late to customer meetings, even a minute late.
A fine. Seriously.
Yeah, sounds small, maybe even petty. But the point was to send an incredibly clear signal. Customer time is sacred. It built this powerful norm of customer centricity through action, not just words. It showed what really mattered.
That's making values tangible, which connects to trust, I guess. He has that other great quote. In any human interaction, the required amount of communication is inversely proportional to the level of trust.
Mm-hmm. It means when trust is high, you don't need endless meetings and memos. When trust is low, you're constantly over-communicating, trying to compensate.
So building trust is paramount. And how do you build it, especially when things are bad?
His answer is radical honesty, transparency, even maybe especially with bad news. It's incredibly hard to deliver bad news knowing people will be scared or upset. But hiding it or sugarcoating it erodes trust faster than anything.
So rip the Band-Aid off.
Basically.
Yeah.
It's painful short term, but it establishes credibility and allows everyone to deal with reality and move forward together. It's the foundation.
Okay, let's bring this together for the listener. What are the big takeaways here? Thinking of the emotional side, it seems like that feeling of loneliness in leadership isn't a sign you're doing it wrong.
Not at all. Horowitz makes it clear it's almost an inevitable part of taking real responsibility for things that affect other people. His honesty helps normalize that. You're not failing if you feel isolated sometimes. You're likely just carrying the weight.
So an emotional insight is the loneliness of leadership is often a sign of responsibility, not failure. And acknowledging it is crucial for resilience.
Beautifully put.
And intellectually. What's the big thought shift he offers?
I think it's this. All the frameworks, the strategies, the MBA stuff.
Yeah.
They're useful tools, sure. But they cannot replace your judgment, your courage, your gut feeling when you're facing something totally new or unexpected, when the map runs out.
The hard things often don't have a playbook.
Exactly. The most important moments are when conventional wisdom doesn't apply, and you have to figure it out yourself, often with incomplete data.
Okay, so an intellectual insight. Leadership isn't just applying frameworks. It's about developing the judgment and courage to navigate ambiguity when the standard answers fail.
That really captures it.
And finally, a universal insight, something anyone can take away, whether they're a CEO or not.
I think it boils down to our relationship with difficulty itself. Meaningful goals, the things really worth doing in life, almost always involve periods of struggle, uncertainty, setbacks. We should expect them.
They aren't signs you should quit.
No. Often they're the price of admission for trying something significant. Success isn't about dodging problems. It's about building the muscle, the resilience, the determination to work through them when they inevitably show up.
Right. So a universal insight. Meaningful achievement requires navigating difficulty. Resilience in the face of struggle, not the absence of it, is the true path to success.
Perfectly said. And maybe one final thought to leave people with.
Go for it.
Horowitz's whole story kind of suggests that maybe the hard thing about hard things is not just that they're hard, it's that they're worth doing anyway.
That's powerful. So for everyone listening, whether you're building a company, leading a project, raising kids, whatever your hard thing is, Maybe Ben Horowitz's journey challenges us to rethink how we face that difficulty. It's not if you'll face it, but how you'll navigate it with wisdom, courage, integrity, and how will you care for others along the way? Definitely something to reflect on. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.